So I was working with Brian on Friday after the school mass to figure out how to run this system of showing any kind of slides. And wouldn't you know, the storm came through on Friday night and blew up the screen. So I think it's God's vengeance. I probably spoke ill of the screens at some point, and now I'm being punished. So we'll see how that goes. The confirmation liturgy was quite something. I guess a lot of people watched it online. I don't know how long the warnings were kind of running, but everyone's phone was not blowing up, so we just kept going. And we finished about 5 to 8, and the bishop came back in and was up here posing for pictures. And the band was playing on, and the storm was coming in, and I thought, then I see people frantically waving like this in the back, and I went back. It's like, I think it's time to take shelter. I heard what they had to say, and I decided the archbishop is not dying at my parish. So people went down the school corridor, and other people went down into the rectory basement, and it was pretty orderly, and nothing struck. But when it was done, the bishop, who in the course of all this had taken off his liturgical clothes and was wearing his clerics, he came right back in and posed for pictures for another 20 minutes. That guy is unbelievable. I mean, he really just keeps going. And it was really a very fine celebration. In fact, our lector was one of the confirmants, so that was a great thing too. Some of you will know that I had an opportunity to travel to Ireland this past March. I have a Jesuit friend by the name of Michael Maher. A surprising number of people actually know who that is. I don't know why. He teaches at Marquette. But he seems to have a lot of time to travel. And he was going to be going to Dublin, and he suggested a couple months ago that I go along. And at first I thought, we're going to kill each other. I don't really want to do that. Then I thought about it, and I needed some continuing education, so I thought, okay, I'm going to go along with him. And he made arrangements for us to stay at the Jesuit community in central Dublin. And he didn't happen to know any of the Jesuits living there, and I certainly did not either. But they turned out to be an absolutely delightful bunch of guys. They all had Irish names, they all had Irish accents, and they could not have been more hospitable to us. In fact, I have, if you ever wondered what Irish Jesuits look like, except for the guy on the right, that's what they look like. And they were tremendous. I mean, I had been there for 3 days, and they heard my birthday was going to fall over the visit. They got me a cake. I mean, these guys really went above and beyond, but I figured, well, I'll make them famous, and then I'll tell them that I did this. But they were just great guys. Okay, so one of the things that Michael and I did when we were there is we saw some of the museums, and we went to the National Gallery. The National Gallery has a lot of different art, but a tremendous collection of paintings. And they happened to have one by my favorite artist, who is Caravaggio, an Italian, lived around the year 1600. And the painting that the National Gallery happened to have is called The Taking of Christ. It represents Jesus being arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane on Holy Thursday night, as we heard when we read the Passion on Palm Sunday and on Good Friday. And so this is a photo of what that looks like, kind of intense. And here's a picture of what it looks like if you go into the National Gallery, see it hanging on the wall. Now, the photo of that, the picture of the taking of Christ did not always hang in the National Gallery. For many, many years, in fact, until 1990, it hung here, which is a very nondescript room. That happens to be the chapel in the Jesuit community residence that I stayed in. I actually prayed in that room. And the picture on the wall is a copy. It's a copy. Because the original is the one that's hanging in the National Gallery. But for 60 years, nobody knew that this little community of Jesuits in central Dublin had an original Caravaggio hanging on their wall. And one of the stories is that one of the Jesuit brothers would dust it every month with a wet mop. I'm not recommending this. It's just one of those things that guys do if you let them all live together. You're going to have somebody who's going to mop something like that. The story is, and as I understand it, they got the painting from a woman who lived in Dublin. Her husband was a British military officer, and in 1924, the IRA assassinated him. And I don't know what one of the Jesuits in that little community did, but he helped this woman in some way, and in gratitude, she gave them the painting. Only much later did somebody realize that's not a copy, that's the real thing. And at that point, the Jesuit community decided they were going to lend the painting to the National Gallery, which was a good idea, because I'm pretty sure Their homeowner's insurance did not cover a painting worth $80 million. So that's what they had there. And to be in that room and kind of look at that and hear, you know, you always hear these kind of stories where somebody finds a Rembrandt or something. It really happened, and I got to be in the room, and I got to see the fake and the real one, which is kind of thrilling. Now, I don't know what the Jesuits felt like when they realized they had an original Caravaggio hanging on the wall, but I imagine they were surprised in the same way as the disciples that we heard in today's gospel as they're walking, the disciples who were walking to Emmaus. This is a story that I find particularly moving. I always like that when it comes up. It comes up every Wednesday, the Wednesday of the octave of Easter. So 3 days after Easter, it's read in the weekday cycle, but we only hear it on Sundays every 3 years, and this is one of those years. Now, one of the riddles of the Gospels of the Easter season that we have to keep in mind is the fact that as the Gospels describe it, many, many people encountered the risen Lord Jesus after he had risen from the dead, but virtually none of them recognize him immediately. And that's kind of an unusual thing. You kind of think, what's going on here? And I presume that the Gospel writers were trying in some way to express the fact that, yes, this really was Jesus that was risen. It really was him, same as before. And yet, after the resurrection, he was living at a level of being completely different than we human beings do in our earthly life. He was risen from the dead, so death had no power over him. He seemed to be able to go into rooms without going through the door. He could eat if he wanted to. I'm sure he didn't need to. He could be at more than one place at the same time. He could travel great distances. I mean, being resurrected is a whole other level, and we can't possibly conceive what that was. But if you're trying to tell the story of Jesus, how do you share that with people and tell them it's the same, he's the same, but he's different? And I think they do that by this idea that you don't recognize him right away, but you recognize him because of something else. Because when you really think about it, very few people in the Gospels, by sight alone, know that the person they're encountering is the risen Lord. Now, sometimes they come to understand because of something that Jesus says. If you picture the story of Mary Magdalene going to the tomb on Easter Sunday morning, she goes, she sees the rock is rolled away, doesn't know where the body is, and she sees somebody who she thinks is the gardener. And she goes up to the gardener and says, where have they put him? He's not here. So she's looking at him, doesn't know anything. Then Jesus, the risen Lord, says, Mary. And when she hears the name, I don't know how it was he said it, but when that name was spoken, Mary Magdalene knew, okay, it's the Lord. It's not the gardener, that's the Lord. In today's gospel, it's not something that is heard. It is something that is done. They're sitting at table, you know, they're walking down the road, and Jesus pretends he doesn't know anything. And then they tell him what's going on, and he fills them in. And then he acts like he's going to keep going down the road, that he's going somewhere else. But he's obviously very engaging, and the people say, hey, it's getting late, it's dark, come on over for dinner. And Jesus does that. Well, while they're at the table, he takes the bread, and he blesses it, and he breaks it, and he gives it to them. And then their eyes are opened. Very strong Eucharistic imagery, as you might imagine, but it's in that particular action that they recognize the risen Lord. So the same painter who painted the painting that's up there happened to paint this one, which is one of my favorites by him. I haven't seen this one in person. I think it's in Spain somewhere. But this is a picture of that moment where the disciples at the table recognize that it's Jesus. And the thing that this particular artist does, I think, is he doesn't just convey the event, he conveys the experience of the event, what it must have been like to be there at that moment. If you look at the guy on the left with the green shirt is grabbing the arms of his chair like he's ready to launch himself, and the disciple on the other side has got his arms thrown out in complete wonder at what's going on. And you know, when you actually get up close to the painting, you're so close that you kind of feel like you're having dinner with them. And at the same time, the figures are so dynamic, it almost seems like they're coming out of the picture right into our space, like they're going to be right next to us. And I think that's, you know, you'd even think that the guy on the left, on the right, with his hand is like going to grab you if you get too close to it. And you know, by painting it this way, I think the artist is doing something very important. He's inviting us to experience the wonder of the resurrection as something not just intellectual, but as something that we can feel emotionally and personally. I mean, we all know Christ rose from the dead. We believe that. That's very important. But how often do we have a sense of, well, what would it have been like at that moment where you realize, I'm not just talking to somebody, I'm talking to Jesus risen from the dead. What would that experience be like? And wouldn't it be great if our faith had moments where we could enter into them like that and not just have it in our heads, but really feel it more deeply in our hearts? And I think that's what art can do. You can kind of experience, see what you think, what details you connect with, but that sense that they're poised and ready to just, you know, jump out, I think really kind of gives me the sense of that's what the resurrection must have been like to experience as one of his followers, that you realize the guy I knew and the person I saw crucified, he's not dead anymore. And that is a revelation to be sure. So I happen to have a copy of that particular painting. It's over in the fireplace room as you go out. Obviously, you're welcome to look at that. The same painter also happened to paint a picture of last week's gospel of Thomas in the upper room. And this is also one of my favorite paintings, because when you look at it, Jesus has Thomas by the wrist and he is guiding Thomas's finger into his side. It's kind of like he's saying, you don't want to believe anymore? I'm going to make you believe. And he grabs it and he does this. It's graphic, but not gross. My sister-in-law never liked looking at that. I used to have it hanging on the wall in my living room. And when she'd come over for like Christmas or Easter, I would always make sure that she was looking at it when she sat down. And she found it a little bit disquieting, but that was fine. She got over it. So and it's no longer in my living room. So if you go to the fireplace room when you leave, you can see both of them there. And kind of see what you think. See what your reaction the first time you see them and say, boy, those were really, really key moments in the story of Jesus and his resurrection. What was that like and what does it mean to me?